Nothing is so privileged as thinking history belongs to the past.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you reviews about the internet's favorite books, those books that are viral on TikTok that everybody's talking about. We read them and we tell you if we think they're worth it if you're a really busy person like we are. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you a John Green book, but no, not a sappy teen romance. We are bringing you his new nonfiction book, Everything is Tuberculosis. And yes, it is what you think it's about. It is sort of a historical look at the worldly effects of the disease tuberculosis on geography, politics, pharmaceuticals, racism and things, and how tuberculosis has shaped our world. But it's also kind of told through the story of a boy that John Green meets in a TB hospital in Sierra Leone. So there's a very personal portion to the book too, but it is a shorter nonfiction read, and it's been a while since we did a nonfiction book, so here we go today.
We're doing it. Do you guys have your book reviews at the ready?
Yes, I do.
Not several.
There was a lot of good reviews. Mm-hmm. Just very funny, very quippy, very short and sweet. I have two that are on Goodreads, and they are like the first things you see when you open Goodreads. One of them is, this is the most John Green thing I've ever seen. And it's a person who has not read the book, but wants to read it. And they just had to write the review of, this is the most John Green thing I've ever seen. This is a 5-star review. And it says, frankly, John, I would have read your grocery lists. And apparently your book's about tuberculosis, too.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, do you want to go next or should I go next?
I have four. They were all like one after another on Fable, and they were all so good. So 3.5 stars, another day of screaming into the void that people should just effing care about each other. 5 Real. Stars, F. Johnson & Johnson.
Yes.
5 stars.
Big up.
Yeah. 5 stars. I'm sobbing into a John Green book. Welcome back to 2013.
Oh my God, yes.
And then 5 stars, Polo.
Polo.
Wait, I don't get it.
Marco
Polo. Did you read the book?
Oh, okay.
That's a good one. I was like, oh, yes, artful.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't read this book a huge amount of time ago, but I read it a week ago. So some of the finer details I'm already losing. Okay. I have 2 reviews. One is a 2-star. It says, this should have been a Substack article. Which I thought was very funny. I also saw a few reviews that said it should have been a podcast, which I think is, you know, I can see that. Okay, and then a 1-star. Just kidding, John, get out of the 1-star reviews. It's bananas good.
So
someone just wrote a little note to John Green in their 1-star review, even though they loved the book, which I thought was so cute.
Yeah, but you're still dragging down the rating. I feel like that's kind of rude.
Okay. The rating is doing just fine. I'm not sure if you've...
Like, great transition.
Yeah.
We're mixing it up a little. We have a few... We've decided to incorporate some of the other book apps. Overall Goodreads rating, as usual, 4.6 out of 5. But we also have Fable, 4.46 out of 5. And Storygraph, 4.49 out of 5. So... The book people all agree. But do you?
I don't know. Does anyone want to go first?
I've seen your rating. I have not seen Catherine's. You and I match. I gave it 3 stars. I listened to it, which was great because I love John Green's voice. Him and Hank Green, his brother, are some of my favorite people on TikTok. Side note, I just love listening to them talk about really nerdy things, and I learn a lot. And I did learn a lot in this book. However, it was, I didn't totally love how it was organized. And I did literally fall asleep to it one time. So while it was interesting, it was one you kind of had to focus on to follow. But I don't know. I just don't think it was everything I expected from it necessarily either, even though. So like I liked it. 3 stars. I liked it. I'd recommend it to people who like John Green and nonfiction.
Yeah. I'll go next since we do match. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was fine. When I read nonfiction, I normally do so because I want to learn about something totally new. Like I don't really read nonfiction books about topics that I already know about. So like that explains some of the books that we've done in the past, like Crematorium about the process of the death industry, or Dream House, which was about an abusive gay relationship. And this one was fine. I just felt like a lot of it I already knew, especially because the later half of the book gets into medical systems and it's more about global medical systems than it is about tuberculosis. And I don't know. I guess I'm just a fucking nerd, but I really just wanted to learn about tuberculosis. Like
that's what I meant by it wasn't totally what I expected.
Yeah. Like I found the history and the influence of tuberculosis really fascinating. But personally, I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I already have more knowledge about the way global health systems work than I would love to have. And so all that stuff I think is great to educate people, but I wasn't as interested in reading it.
And to validate you, it was the global health system stuff where I fell asleep.
I will say that was like the weakest part of the book, I think. I think it could have been condensed because we got his message very early on about how the inequities of the global health system and stuff like that. I give it 4 stars, though, because I really, really enjoyed the first part of the book and how everything is tuberculosis, like learning about how New Mexico is tuberculosis, learning about how the Stetson hat is connected to tuberculosis, like things that I wouldn't have expected.
You like that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Freaking Texan. Well, because Stetson hats, there's a Stetson shop 2 blocks from my parents' house. Like this is literally like
me there. We did go there.
We did go there. So I really enjoyed that part. And I really enjoyed the personal story. I wasn't expecting that as much because I didn't read the back cover. I wasn't expecting Henry's story. And I thought that really like captured the audience more and captured the book more, like having this personal anecdote from a guy he actually does know who's struggling with tuberculosis in Sierra Leone. I thought like really pulls at your heartstrings and really gets you invested in the fight for tuberculosis. But I agree the ending, once we got past like the history of tuberculosis and into modern day, and then it kind of expanded out to just general health systems, it was kind of, you lost me a bit. And then when they brought Henry back in, that's when I like came back into the book. So it's not a perfect 5 for me, but I very much so learned a lot and enjoyed his writing style.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I think we can all agree on that. Okay. So a little bit interesting to answer this for a nonfiction book, but is it more plot or character driven?
It is interesting because we do have a character.
Yes, there is an actual narrative within the book.
I'm a little stumped.
It's interesting. So this is not a spoiler because I think it is technically on the book jacket, even though I don't think any of us read the book jacket. but Caitlin, you said at the beginning, the narrative is about basically this boy or man. That John Green meets in Sierra Leone. And I think that part in and of itself is kind of plot driven because it's about his effort to get treatment for tuberculosis. But I would actually kind of argue that this book is more character driven because I feel like we spend a lot of time ruminating on like what things mean and what this means for who John Green is, and also what it means for like who the doctors are and who the insurance people are.
This is interesting in that John Green is a character in this book himself.
Mm-hmm.
And his feelings about things, it is not an unbiased opinion. It is a biased opinion based on his personal experiences. Wow, like all the information, the facts are unbiased, but like how he feels about what to do with those facts, like you definitely get his opinion. Mm-hmm. So it is almost character driven.
Yeah, I feel like we're actually reading like his mind change from his perspective as he learns about tuberculosis.
Sort of, which is weird to think about and I hadn't really thought about until just now.
I mean, yeah, he is a character in and of itself because he starts out the book not knowing anything really about tuberculosis except for it's that old-fashioned disease that no one has anymore. But then he actually meets a person with tuberculosis and realizes, oh, this is not an old-fashioned disease. It's very much alive and well in countries that don't have the resources to fight this bacteria. So yeah, I think it is character driven because it's both his story and Henry's story and how they intertwine and intersect. And like reading Henry's like letters and stuff like that and his notes and stuff was like really beautiful.
Also, just a random note, but I listened to this podcast with John Green. I think he does say it in the book. But the podcast episode I listened to with John Green was about John Green's OCD, which John Green actually has like fairly severe OCD. And so on this podcast episode, he described what that actually means, like not Hollywood's version of what an OCD person does, but how he actually lives as a person with OCD. And it was so fascinating reading this book because John Green's OCD fixation is about bacteria and bacteria being in him and on his hands and not being able to see them. And he has this whole fixation and like existential dread about like microbes being in his body. And so I wondered if he started writing this book to try to calm himself down a little bit and then ended up just kind of in this really depressing tuberculosis rabbit hole.
Fair. If you don't follow, I'm going to say once again, if you don't follow John Green and Hank Green on TikTok, if you're on TikTok, you should. Hank Green has kind of become TikTok's resident scientist where people will tag him and be like, explain this. And then he will. And I've learned some really interesting things from him and his brother. And they are funny together also. And they both do this thing where they just like want to know more about something. And that's how we get this book.
Absolutely. But
it's not all John Green is known for. Have you read other books by him? And did you expect him to write this nonfiction disease book?
So knowing what I knew courtesy of that podcast episode, that John Green's OCD fixation is disease and microbes and bacteria, yes, but if I hadn't known that, I would have been very surprised because actually, no, as I'm thinking about it, I wouldn't have been surprised because also John Green does those history videos. And that is basically how I learned world history, is watching John Green videos. So
Crash Course.
Yeah, Crash Course. That's what it's called. I forgot. Yeah, I used to watch Crash Course videos. So this actually feels kind of up his alley to me.
Yeah, like I said, I follow him on TikTok, so I know this makes sense to me. Also, he has another nonfiction book. I had to look up the title because it's a hard word. The Anthropocene Reviewed. I probably said that wrong. But the only other book I had read of his before this, despite him having many very popular books that have even been adapted, is I've read The Fault in Our Stars. And of course, it's one of the very few books that made me cry.
Yeah. I read The Fault in Our Stars when I was 15 or 14, and it was the day after the last day of finals in high school. And I just sobbed in a chair for like an hour listening to Skinny Love by Bernie.
Yes, that song. Oh my God. Yeah.
That song. I literally remember I was reading it. I was working at my dad's office in the summer, home from college or right after high school. I don't remember. And I was eating lunch on my lunch break on this couch. And I remember the bad thing happened while I had like PB&J in my mouth. So I was sitting there crying and couldn't swallow my sandwich because I had a bite in my mouth. I do remember this very vividly.
That's so funny. Catherine, that song still is like a time capsule to me. Like listening to it makes me 13 again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I've also read Looking for Alaska. And Catherine, I did kind
have
of
you not read An Abundance of Catherine's.
I have not, actually. I'm aware of it, but I have not read it. I'm also not surprised he wrote this just because I grew up on Crash Course and him and Hank have been doing Crash Course videos since we were in middle school.
Right.
That's funny. I did not grow up on Crash Course, so it must have like just been after me.
That is kind of interesting. But yeah, I've also read the John Green highlights, Looking for Alaska, Paper Towns, Farm-Law Stars. But it's been a long time since I read a John Green book, like since I was like 14.
I wonder how many people are reading this just because they've read some of those.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like how many people are like, John Green's new book. And then like, this is not what I thought I was getting.
Tuberculosis. Yeah.
If you're one of those people, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. How is the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I listened to it on audiobook, and I think it took me 3 days to fully listen to it.
So I read this on one plane trip. It's like a 4 or 5 hour plane ride from DC to Sacramento, which I recently had to do. And I read it basically without stopping in like 3 hours on this plane. Honestly, though, I was a very captive audience to this book because I did not have anything else that I wanted to do on the plane. So I think the first half of the book, the pacing is pretty good. I think the last half of the book, it starts to lose that a little bit. We've already kind of mentioned it moves from more what tuberculosis is and like a brief history of it to more of a focus on the medical system and then the narrative of the boy that John meets, Henry. And so, yeah, the second half of the book, I struggled to stay interested and stay reading more than the first half.
I agree. Even from a listening perspective, I also listened. I listened to it on like 1.2 or 3 times speed, maybe more, because he narrates very slowly, actually. It sounded more normal, a little sped up. But it took me several days just because I was really busy. And also, I was mostly listening to it in the car. And there was the day that I was tired and listening to it on my couch that I did fall asleep because the pacing towards the end is not my favorite. Like you've all said, the beginning, really interesting. And the end was a nice wrap up. It was like 3/4 through that I was like, I don't know.
Please stop now. Yeah.
But it is a fairly short book.
It is.
It is. I think it's the right length for what it is.
It was like a 4 or 5 hour audiobook.
Yeah.
And like I said, he reads very slowly.
Yeah. I think it's like 200 pages. It might actually be like 180 pages. Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Crash Course.
I would watch, Crash Course World History.
That is part, so you can tell, I think, when you read this book that John Green is used to working in other mediums, because when I saw Goodreads reviews saying this should have been a podcast, I actually kind of agreed. And it's not that I didn't like the book. It just, he has such like an auditory writing style that I felt sort of like I was listening to a podcast, even though I was reading it and I wasn't doing an audiobook.
Yeah, he's done some snippets. It was like promotion for this book on TikTok where he'd like pick a topic and be like, and that's how it's connected to tuberculosis. You should read my book. And those are actually really interesting.
Yeah. I feel like I might actually enjoy that more than the book.
Yeah. He does a really funny one where he gets his daughter in on it, I think, where he's just like, what was the main cause of death in the year like 1770? And she's just like, tuberculosis. And he's like, right. And then he goes on until he gets to like 15, like hundreds around the time of the Black Plague. And she goes, tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. He's like, wrong, bubonic plague. But everything else was tuberculosis.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
Like, what a digestible way to help people learn something.
It's true. They make learning fun, him and his brother. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's really all our non-spoiler discussion questions. Do you guys know what Busy Girl rating you'd give the book?
I would honestly give it a 5 because I obviously gave it 4 stars and I think it's a very, I know. They're looking at me like I'm crazy.
My face card is not silent.
I found it a very easy listen with John Green and his voice, and it's only like a 5 hour audiobook. So like if you're listening on 1.5 speed, it's a lot quicker.
I'm struggling. I've thought about leaving it a 3 and I've thought about giving it a 4. I think I might give it a 4 just for length. It's not going to be a book that I think I recommend to people much. However, I do think there's an audience for it, and I do think it's short enough that if you just want a quick palate cleanser, especially like you're in between chonky fantasy books or something, I think it's decent for that purpose.
I've also been waffling between 3 and 4. It is so short. Also, I did fall asleep. The beginning's so well paced, and then it kind of drags. I don't know. I'll get a 4, like you, just because it's short. Not everybody's into nonfiction. Not everybody thinks John Green is as whimsical and fun as we do. So they might just be like, why am I reading a tuberculosis book? So
honestly, we are just John Green's target audience. It was teenagers who grew up on John Green.
That's true. Okay, you know who I would really recommend this book to is a high schooler doing a book report. Like, if you just need to learn about something in a digestible way, this is a great book. But, you know, as an adult, I don't need to do that.
So I just like learning now, and that's who he writes for, is other people like him who just like learning things.
Yeah. Right.
That's okay. Not everybody.
Yeah, no. Cool. So that ends our non-spoiler section. Interesting, because it's hard to like spoil tuberculosis, but we are obviously going to get into more of the specifics in the book. So if you'd like to go in and read this book eventually and not know everything that's going to happen, we are about to tell you everything that's going to happen.
Just to jump right in, can we skip to the second question? Because it's what I've been dying to say. If Henry had died, I would have given this book like 1 star.
Yeah.
I thought it's nonfiction. Yeah, I thought he was going to die.
Because he started using Henry in the past tense at the beginning. And I was like, what do you mean was?
Reading his poems. I'm like, are you reading his poems because he's dead?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't going to give it 1 star if he died. But like, I would have been very upset.
Like, there was tension in the book, and there is something to spoil, so I just spoiled it. Henry survives. thank God. Yes.
Which I want to follow him on YouTube. Survive.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I am similar. I really thought that he was going to die. I really did think that was going to be basically the inciting incident that led to whatever the book's conclusion was going to be, was, you know, his death, and then John Green feeling like he needs to use his platform to raise awareness. But I'm glad he didn't die. It's obviously a happier story that he didn't die, but still does a lot to demonstrate the complexity of treating tuberculosis. Also, horrifying that tuberculosis mutates so quickly and becomes antibiotic resistant.
Yeah. So we can circle back a little bit to the first question that I skipped. Did you know anything about tuberculosis before reading this book? I feel like in plenty of old-timey books I read, you know, you hear conception or the, you know, coughing up blood, and you know it was an old-timey thing. And I also know that it's still in other countries. I didn't realize as much as it actually is, I guess. And I know that like a lot of like schools and daycares and things make you get tested for TB before you work in them, so you don't expose young children. But yeah, I was terrified to find out that all these people who aren't able to finish their drug regimens while fighting TB are actually just giving it drug resistance. So we're actually causing TB to remain an epidemic by not making medication accessible.
Yeah.
There were so many things I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yes. I was just going to say, this book goes down so different post-COVID, because I feel like the average person's knowledge base about diseases is a lot higher now because of, you know, what we all went through and the things we had to do. I definitely thought that this book, I'm glad I read it after COVID, because I do think I better understand virality and how diseases work. But I did not know anything about tuberculosis other than I knew that was one of the big things that used to spread on like ships trying to immigrate to America. And that's one of the ways that people would get rejected is if someone on the ship had tuberculosis.
Also interesting is reading this after reading Europe Wonders when they're still first figuring out virality. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was interesting.
I found it very interesting and very fascinating because, like, I knew of tuberculosis as, like, a thing because there was one tuberculosis case at our university while we were there and everyone started freaking out and obviously worked in the journalism school. So, like, I knew about it and it was at a dorm that was nearby. That was interesting. And then I knew it because my cousin lived in Ethiopia for a while working for the State Department. The U.S. And they would have to ship milk. Like my aunt would ship them chocolate milk for their young son, who was like, I think 6 or 7, because you couldn't drink the milk in Ethiopia because all the cows have tuberculosis.
Yeah, so bovine. They talked about that.
Yes. Bovine tuberculosis. So I knew about tuberculosis as a kid because I was around the same age as I was a couple of years older than my younger cousin. And he was having to get milk shipped to him because they couldn't drink any of the milk from Ethiopia, which was very interesting. But I'm also a hypochondriac. So this was an interesting book to read. I'm surprised I didn't hate this book because I'm a hypochondriac. But I think it's actually good to know about these things so that I can conceptualize my way out of no, you do not have tuberculosis.
Well, and I think that's where now we're back to Henry. It was important to work Henry in as the case study because it just helped you take all the information John Green was giving you and digest it by looking at how it affected a real person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're really lucky. We don't live in any of the circumstances that Henry lives in, but a lot of people do. And making that, giving it a name, giving that situation a name made it, I think, more impactful and easier to digest and remember.
Yeah, no, I agree. The last thing I knew about tuberculosis actually came up in the book, and I had a fangirl moment because in college, my two friends and roommates that I lived with both worked in healthcare, and so one of them worked in a hospital and had to get the TB test. And I used to think, why are they testing you for TB? No one has TB anymore. Now I know. Also, she got the test that they were talking about in the book that raises on your skin. Mm-hmm. It's literally the same test. And John Green was talking about this test and how the way we diagnose it hasn't evolved at all. And I was like, oh my God, my roommate literally had to do this exact test that they're talking about. That
was my mom and sister have both done it multiple times for education stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, oh my gosh, I know about that now.
Yep. I guess I didn't realize a lot of people didn't know about that. I don't know.
I didn't know about that.
I didn't know about it until,
My mom had to get it every 2 years for the preschool she worked at.
That makes sense now conceptually, now that I've read this book. And also, I know I got the TB vaccine when I was a baby because I got every vaccine because my family, not anti-vaxxers.
I also definitely got the TB vaccine.
I mean, I feel like we all did.
Surely we all did. Anyway.
There was also a mumps outbreak at Mizzou, so who knows?
Oh my God. That was the year before we got there, and we had to get mumps vaccines.
I was there.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay, so back to our questions. What did you think of the message of the book being the cure is where the disease is not, and the disease is where the cure is not?
Made me illogically angry at things I can't control, as usual, anytime I learn something about the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mentioned this a little bit before, but as a type 1 diabetic, I already have an intense and deep hatred for the medical complex and the way it treats people and price gouges people. But I thought it was really smart because I was like, yeah, I mean, what do you think happens to type 1 diabetics in other countries? It's not good. They don't have the technology. They don't have the resources. And Johnson & Johnson being a major villain in this book was very gratifying for me because Johnson & Johnson is one of the only companies that manufactures insulin.
Yeah, and the patent section where, like the in India, where they're fighting against renewing the patents so that people could afford treatment. I was like, oh, like I knew pharmaceutical companies were in it for profit, but I didn't. I think that was just a really good actual literal example of how much they seek profit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've always thought the patent system in medicine in particular is corrupt and like just bullshit. I really don't think we should have patents for scientific advancement and medicine, especially when it's going to save lives.
I know about it in the context of like cancer treatment. Okay. Yeah. But I didn't think things that are as old as a cure for tuberculosis were being repatented. Like, that's insane.
It is insane.
So now I'm more aware. Thank you, John Green.
Yeah. Well, and like, because I knew about insulin, because obviously I have friends who are type 1 diabetics. Shout out Casey. So I've seen the struggle, like, secondhand of, like, getting insulin, getting all the equipment and the pumps and fighting the system in place, phone calls and ridiculousness, insurance. I've always, like, had, like, a great disdain for the American healthcare system. not the doctors in it, obviously, just the people who run it. And I hated... I hate where people pretend to be like Robin Hood or pretend to be like, oh, we're doing great things. Look at all our aid we're giving. But then you're not actually truly giving aid. You're like dropping in randomly and then immediately leaving when things get easier. But then they get hard again and then you have to drop in again. Like, it's like just share the wealth. Like, I mean, like, it's not hard to not patent these life-saving medications. It's not hard when you have basically unlimited wealth in your country to ship meds to countries that need it more. Because the cure is in the United States and in Western world, but there's not a lot of TB cases here. So why don't we ship that medicine somewhere where there are TB cases? And like, the end of the book is very like, it leaves you like, you're kind of hopeful, but you're not really. And it's just like,
I feel like we're just talking like America and Africa. No, South America, Asia. Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally everywhere but here in Europe.
Yeah. Right? And like, I just, at this point, I only see a future where TB becomes like a super bug that we never can get rid of. And it just turns into COVID quadruple times worse. And that's like a horrifying thought, but that's the road we're going down.
Well, and something he probably wisely didn't touch on a ton is the vaccine, the prevention. He kind of tackles the people already have it. But like, in the age of people not wanting to vaccinate their children, like, this could be us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can come back.
Right. Now, it's really scary. I actually avoid in general reading books about the medical system because of how angry and depressed it makes me. Which is also kind of, I think, why I ultimately would have preferred if it was more about tuberculosis. And it's not that I didn't think the information is important, because I think it is. It's just that I don't know that I needed to receive that because I already know it. But I really did enjoy learning, because now that I see it, I get the title Everything is Tuberculosis, because after reading it, he talks about all these things in the medical system that evolved because of tuberculosis. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen that before. Or, oh, like, I have noticed that before. I didn't know that was because of tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm. Which, speaking of, what did you think about learning the history of tuberculosis? And what do you think about the cure? I will go ahead and say I've been wanting to talk about, yes, I loved how it like talked about the formation of the American West. But my favorite part was when he was talking about how artists in England wanted to have consumption because it was beautiful and inspired creativity and it was inherited. Yes. Insane.
Yeah. It was wild. And it actually made sense after reading it, because I had never actually been cognizant of the sickly artist type. Like, it's not something that I feel like was ever brought to my attention before that I knew I could identify it. But ever since he pointed it out, I'm like, oh my god, yeah, the sickly artist trope is totally a thing that pops
everyone
up
everyone he
everywhere.
Named I was like, oh,
the Brontes. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And it's crazy that it became like a beauty standard to have tuberculosis, because so many people had tuberculosis.
Well, because like you knew about it in pop culture, because if you're a fan of Taylor Swift, she has a song called The Lakes, and it's Take Me to the Lakes Where All the Poets Went to Die. They all died of consumption. Yeah, they went to the lakes to die.
Yeah,
it is present in lots of older classic books, consumption. Mm-hmm. I will say, for a long time when I was much younger, I thought consumption was alcoholism.
Yes, I assumed that as well.
I thought they meant he was drunk, and now I'm like going back over my like ancient, you know, early America's like, literature, like, oh,
or like, no, binge eating. That's what I thought too.
Right. So like, because the wealthy were in cities, it was a disease of the wealthy, the industrialized. So that was really interesting how people kind of wanted it. Like, it was very bizarre. But then as soon as the cure happened, it became a disease of the poor and the people of other races. And I was like, oh, snap.
I did think that was a very interesting point, because then it became the difference between who can afford a treatment and who can't. I also did like the way he talked about the sociological effects of the way diseases are stigmatized. Mm-hmm. Because that's something I hadn't really thought about, but you are kind of seen like, if you have cancer, you're a victim, and you're, you know, and you are, and that's all true. You know, you're the unfortunate, it's tragic, but if you have tuberculosis, you're gross, you know, you didn't get a vaccine, you're like, that's weird. And so I did think it was fascinating how much we have internalized the information that this is like a quote unquote, like, poor country's problem.
Well, and comparing it, rightfully so, to leprosy, was very smart in comparison. Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, like, if you grew up in the church, you grew up reading about leprosy in the Bible. Like, people, I feel like, are just more aware about it. Like, there was a whole Hawaiian island that was a leper colony. Like, I learned about that. I don't know why I know all of these things. But, like, the isolation of contagious disease, somehow contagious makes it more dirty. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, cancer is not contagious, so you are a victim. The others are like, oh, you must be living in filth to have
you did this to yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
I also, another point in the book that I had never thought of before, but also makes the idea that people wanted to have tuberculosis make sense, is that you could live with tuberculosis for years. Like, I did not know that you could just survive for years, kind of getting medical attention and waiting for your body to fully break down.
Well, like, everybody, most people have it, but not everyone has it active. It's like very...
Right. It's like dormant in most people. But then all these artists were like, you know, having tuberculosis for like 5 years before they died. But also think about how isolating that is in the modern context, where people know that it's viral. Like, you basically have to be isolated for years.
Which,
if you don't have treatment.
On that one poet who liked that his art was better, but was like, I saw the snow through a hole in the door, you know?
Yeah, like, it's devastating. Yeah, that was a really emotional part of the book.
Yeah, the poetry of it all. There was like poetry interwoven throughout all of it, from the poets of like the 1800s, and then also like Henry's poetry. And it's just like, it's very good poetry. Like, it's very nuanced and interesting, but it's talking about a personal experience that is like heartbreaking and heart-wrenching, and like to be completely isolated from people and not being able to move because your body is just breaking down and wasting away. Like, I couldn't imagine. Like, that seems like the worst kind of pain or death you could possibly think of.
When Henry was on his like third version of it or something crazy, like, he had the curable one, but he didn't finish his drugs because of his crazy dad, and then he had the like not curable one, you know, like,
yeah,
these poor people.
And he kept getting better and getting worse and getting better and getting worse, and then
his friends die in the bed next to him, like,
yeah,
right. And they had to get a whole government to organize for where he could get his proper medication.
Yeah. And like, without John Green, would Henry have received this treatment? I don't think he actually played that much of a role in it. It was more, it sounded like the doctor.
The doctor, yeah.
But like, without an advocate like that,
It's hard to imagine.
Henry was lucky.
Yeah.
Right. And that's also the point, is like, if he had been in anywhere else, like in any other hospital in that country, in any other country on that continent, had any other doctor there, he would have died, because that doctor did everything he could, like basically moved mountain and earth to get him drugs that the medical establishment said he didn't really deserve to have.
He was a true advocate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lucky to have his mother, who did not leave him too.
Right.
It sounds like in those countries, most people who receive the illness also are left alone.
That was really sad too, about how they can never really go back to their communities because they're always thought of as like contagious.
Yeah. And like, how are you supposed to heal when you're unhappy? You're lonely. That like does affect how you heal. Like, if you've given up mentally, your body's going to follow suit. So it's just sad.
Well, John Green did mention one of the causes of active tuberculosis is stress, which is a mental thing. So if you're mentally stressed out and strung out, that can cause the tuberculosis in your body to become active. And that's when you have the disease suddenly.
So yeah, undernutrition does that to those people, but who knows?
Well, and like, it's like they're putting them in a sanatorium, which is what we did in the 1800s. You see all around, like there's all these like haunted houses that people go into, and it's like a haunted hospital. They're sanatoriums. They were there for TB and now they're abandoned. And now they're the most haunted places in America. You see them all the time on like YouTube videos and stuff. Like, they just call them sanatoriums. And I'm like, oh, it's TB. Got it.
Yeah, I also thought sanatoriums were for like insane people because it has the word san in it. So I clearly didn't know what consumption or sanatoriums were when I was younger. I've since figured it out before reading this book, but still.
Yeah.
No, I thought the same thing, where I was actually surprised that's what they were for. I was like you guys, under the impression that that was for the mentally ill. And I think that there were sanatoriums for the mentally ill, but I did not know that there were sanatoriums for tuberculosis patients.
And I think a majority of them were for tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about the cure, he talked about how basically the cure keeps having to evolve because the disease keeps having to evolve, and how, you know, every new cure is a new patent, et cetera, et cetera. But the people where essentially the cure and racism go hand in hand, because people in the poor countries who tend to not be white cannot access these new cures for the evolving disease, even though they are the places where the diseases are evolving. What did you think about this part? Because I was endlessly frustrated reading it, listening to it.
So mad.
It also, so hearkening back again to my incredibly low opinion of the medical establishment, but I was actually really surprised that it sounds like there's not much research going to tuberculosis anymore. And in the context of Green's book, it makes sense because it's no longer a big issue for wealthy countries like the United States and European countries. And so all the science shifted away. So you can tell in the book that a lot of the medicines that they're fighting this with are actually sort of dated. Not that they don't work, but they're not necessarily the way they would be if it was a disease like diabetes or cancer that impacts people in wealthy countries just as much.
Erectile dysfunction.
Vaccinations that make people go blind. Like, what?
Yep.
Deaf and blind because you're getting treated?
Yeah, that was crazy to have a side effect like that. I mean, if tuberculosis was in the United States, we would not tolerate that being considered a cure.
I guarantee that's not a treatment offered in the U.S.
No.
Exactly.
But it is other places.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it just shows how as soon as it stopped becoming a problem here, even though it's a problem globally, the whole medical system just started to ignore it.
And the cure is in our grasp. Like, we have the baseline that we need in order to like create new drugs to fight the drug resistance. We just don't invest in that research, which is so endlessly frustrating, because there are things that I don't think we need to be researching. As a country, we need to decide like what we need to be researching. And it has to be thought of in a global sense and not just an insular United States sense. Like, yes. We live in a world. We live in a society.
Right. What the book makes you realize is eradication is possible. But because people don't live near a hospital where there's treatment, or don't have the money to finish the treatment, or don't have food to eat while taking their treatment, they don't finish their treatment and the disease evolves. So, like, it's possible to eradicate, but we never will because we make it inaccessible to treat and then vaccinate.
And one of the scariest parts is that we know that that will ultimately be to our detriment, because the more opportunities that tuberculosis has to evolve and develop resistance to medication, the more likely it is that it will reappear here in a form that we can't treat, which is very scary.
Which maybe apocalypse. It's good this came after COVID, so people will take it more seriously.
Yeah. Now we all know. How many
variations of COVID have I had personally? Like, that's crazy.
Right. Way too many at this point.
Now we all know how diseases can legitimately spread across the country and cause a pandemic and a huge health concern and put incredible strain on hospital systems, so that even people in wealthy countries could die.
And kill our medical workers.
Yes.
It talks about too.
Right. Like, if you're a nurse for a tuberculosis patient, you'll probably eventually be a tuberculosis patient.
I mean, like, it was very interesting learning about the history of Sierra Leone and the civil unrest that happened, and then that caused the collapse in the healthcare system. So it was already, like, patients were already being treated like children, essentially. Like, they would have to go to the hospital and be watched to take their pills. But then the hospital would run out of those pills because they had no, like, centralized system, because everything had collapsed. And so it's just like, you know, like, the WHO or someone could have come in and figured something out, and also give them a 30-day supply, give them a 60-day supply. Like, yeah. Why do you not trust these people to deal with their own care?
That part was crazy too.
The idea was insane, because also, what makes you more likely to take your medication? Oh, that it's easy to take. Like, if it's already at home with me, I'm going to take it. These people were having to, like, walk like a 4-hour walk to the only clinic in their, like, a 15-mile radius of them just to take their pill. I was like, yeah, why would you make it?
They don't think they're smart enough to take their own medication.
They don't trust them. Which is crazy.
Which is so racist.
And it's not an old problem. It's like a pretty recent problem.
It still exists. Yeah. That's the treatment method. It hasn't evolved at all since starting these treatments.
It's crazy. It is so crazy. It's so crazy, too, just to think about how people in the United States would react if they were told they needed to do that.
It would be an inconvenience we would never accept in the United States.
Right. And you'd also just, again, that's part of why that part in particular made me so mad, is because it's like, just think through it. Like, am I more likely to take my medication if it's here with me in my apartment, or am I more likely to take my medication if I have to go on a 4-hour drive to receive it? Like, obvious, it's just obvious, but that's not how they wanted to do it because of all the factors that John Green talks about.
Now I'm getting more angry talking about it again.
Also, to be frank, you can't trust people in the United States to take all their antibiotics. Like, you have to explain to people why it's important that they do this, and you can't just shake your finger at them.
Well, John Green even mentions that, like, a fourth of people in the U.S. do not finish their antibiotic rounds because they're like, well, I feel better, or the bruising has gone away, or whatever bacterial infection has gone away visibly. So they stop taking their meds. Like, there are so many people that I know that were given, like, a 20-day or 30-day course of antibiotics, and they did not finish it because they're like, well, I feel better. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. The bacteria can still be there. You should take as medically necessary. Resistant
diseases.
Yes. Yay. And I had to, like, force my friend to basically take a pill. So I was like, you have two left. Take the last fucking two. How is that hurting you at all?
Right. And so it's also just, like, a problem of, well, something like that is just as likely to happen in the United States as it is to happen in an African country. And also, you need to explain to people why they have to take the whole thing. You can't just be like, do it or else.
Yes. But here it's happening just because people make that choice. There it's happening because they don't think they're intelligent enough to receive that information.
Haha. Uh-huh. Isn't that fun?
Racism. We.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of sets us up great for our last question, which is, did this book leave you hopeless or hopeful?
A little bit of both, because Henry survived and I was very hopeful with that, where I was like, okay, systems can change. We see that in Henry's case, where the medicine was not available to his country, but he had advocates in his corner that were pushing for Sierra Leone to get the medication he'd so desperately needed. And because of that, he is the test case that allows for others who are having drug resistant tuberculosis to get the care they so desperately need. But then also John Green mentions, like, there's one of two ways this could go. We either step up and actually start helping the world and we can eradicate this disease once and for all, or we do nothing and it becomes a superbug that we cannot stop and we all die. And I'm like, I have a feeling route two is going to be the route we take because it's the route of least resistance.
Yeah, I would say the book left me in a mixed space. Again, I understand deeply on a personal level why these systems are so hard to change and why they probably will not change, because they definitely will not change of their own accord. They're just making too much money and have been allowed to grow and be this way, totally unregulated. So I don't think the whole system will change without, like, an act of Congress, which is like saying it won't change without an act of God, because oh God, that's not going to happen. But
it's,
I
not
do,
on their radar.
Right. But I do still have faith that more people are working for the right thing and want the right thing to happen than there are working against the right things. And so I do have faith that activists and people in these countries will be able to fight for themselves and work with their own governments and with lawyers and activists and volunteers and doctors to make the situation at least better than it is now.
Yeah, I also have a mix. I hope there are more doctors like the one Henry had who leave their families to make a difference in the world. Like, I don't hope people do that, but you know what I mean? Like, he cared so deeply that he left his family. And I don't know. I'm frustrated, but I'm like, what can I do personally? Probably nothing realistically, but like, I don't know. I'm hopeful, cautiously optimistic.
I mean, we are doing something by talking about this book and bringing it some awareness to it. I do think that this book should be required reading for high schoolers in like a world history class, maybe, or maybe a science class, because I do think that this is not talked about enough. And it's a very easy book to read as a high schooler. And I think it'll open eyes and open minds, and hopefully that the next generation coming up will have more of an awareness and more of an empathy towards other people in other countries. And hopefully that's how we can make changes. But I really hope that it's not too late by then.
I know. I know that this would ultimately, you know, be terrible, but tuberculosis, you know, could become very dangerous, like within our lifetimes, mm-hmm. in which case it would become priority for all the governments and companies and people that are currently ignoring it. So I think it'll get solved one way or another, but, you know, I don't feel great about the amount of people who could die in the meantime.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, what a depressing end.
Yeah, so sorry. I guess I think we all wish we could say we were more hopeful, but it's best not to be delusional.
We've all worked in news.
Yeah. We worked in news during COVID, so.
Right. Okay, do you guys have book recommendations?
That's a great question. Yeah. I guess I'll go with Year of Wonders because it's about the plague.
Yeah, thematic.
Um, I read The End of Eden, and it's kind of a similar strain about butterfly effect of climate change stuff. Also a little bit scary, but optimistic. So I did like that one.
I was looking for a documentary that I watched about a leper colony. I forget in what country. I, for the life of me, cannot find the title, so I cannot recommend it to you guys. However, I did watch a documentary about a leper colony, which was very good, and it basically looked at what it's like to live in this very isolated society when the greater world around you does not welcome your presence, and how leprosy can kind of disable you over time, but you're not actually a danger to others. It's not contagious. So it's sort of about how people's ideas about the disease govern it more than the actual facts about what it's like to have leprosy, which is a very influential theme in this book. So sorry that I cannot recommend it to you.
We got the gist of it.
Yeah. If you can find it, please slide into our DMs and then we can post about it.
As I write down mystery leper.
Mystery leper.
Documentary.
Well done.
I feel so bad to do that. It's like just the most non. The House is Black. That's what it's called. It's set in Iran. Okay, I found it. Sorry to cause so much heartache. The House is Black. and it was very good, very artsy film type thing. So don't watch it thinking it's going to be like John Green, but that's all.
Okay, well, first book of year four of the Busy Girls Book Club done. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking with us through a nonfiction book. We know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but feel free to rate and review if you like that sort of thing. You can find us everywhere at Busy Girls Pod or busygirlspod.com. Feel free to send us your book recs. We especially love learning what kind of nonfiction things our listeners like to learn about. But for today, that's pretty much it. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls of Book Club.